The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decision.
Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth. Now, here's your host, financial advisor and CEO of Cordasco Financial Network, Steve Cordasco.
Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth podcast. Thrilled that you're joining me on today's program. Lots of questions coming in from you and requests from you on a deep discussion on the future of inflation, what it means to you, your money, our economy. Also, tying into that, lots of questions and the ask for a deeper discussion around the current massive deficit spending that's happening right now. I'm going to jump in and answer many of the questions that have been coming in the last couple of weeks to the Your Life, Your Wealth podcast. Let's begin with fears of long-term inflation and why this is likely to be a short-term problem. The headline news and what's trending right now is the inflation story. Commodity prices like lumber, food, all up substantially. Housing prices up substantially. Automobiles up substantially. Goods and services and things that we use every single day up substantially. I'm saying it's a short-term problem, not a systemic long-term issue. This is important to recognize when it comes to navigating your wealth and having your wealth do what you need it to do for your long-term solvency and your comfort in retirement or venturing into retirement. Why am I on the side of the line that it's just a short-term issue versus a much deeper and more serious long-term problem? Has to do with this. The reason for this current spike of inflation is just too many dollars chasing too few goods. The too few goods are part of the equation because our supply chain is very broken and damaged. Not just broken and damaged in manufacturing, putting things together and getting things where they need to be. It's damaged in that we've lopsided the ecosystem of our economy. This is where deficit spending comes in. This is where massive government influence comes in. The government in its stimulation process, as you know, we hear about an infrastructure bill. An infrastructure bill that's currently on the table, some of which has worked its way into legislation, some that is still pending and being debated. Much of that deficit spending will go to projects that are longer-term investments into our economy. Problem is, much of it also does not equal a long-term investment and actually a short-term problem, and that is money that's not going into projects to build infrastructure that will pay dividends for decades and centuries forward. Much of the deficit spending is going into things that don't bring long-term health to our economy, but act as some type of short-term fix. That's just giving money to people. Stimulus, stimmy as they call it. Because when you overdo that, you then mess up the ecosystem of the economy. And that's what we have today with people who don't want to work. The way to their money runs out to go back to work. You have regulations forcing people not to work, even though they want to. And that was when it was mandated that you had to stay at home and could not go in and get your job done unless you were an essential part of the healthcare system. That will right itself. That deficit spending will cause problems longer into the future, but it is creating inflation at the moment because all that stimmy will get worked back into the system. It's being spent. It's being spent on airline tickets. It's being spent on Amazon. It's being spent on entertainment. It's being spent on gas. It's being spent on new vehicles, upgrading a used vehicle, housing. And that short-term spike in inflation that we're seeing as people are spending these stimmies, that will increase tax revenue into the short-term side of the government's balance sheet. When that runs out, and the technology advancements that have been taking place even prior to a pandemic will take grip. I don't believe we're on a long-term bad trend. I do believe all this deficit spending has the potential to create long-term dividends on the portion of it that's spent correctly. The problem we have here is the new administration came out and said over the next decade, look for somewhere in the area of 2% growth, economic growth. That's not going to get the job done of paying down that deficit. And frankly, I'm not so sure I'm believing the numbers. I believe we'll see better economic growth. Let's talk a little bit about the questions that have been coming in on the Federal Reserve's actions to deal with inflation. They've been very accommodative. They will continue to be accommodative. I usually believe that the Fed gets things wrong statistically. If you look at their track record over the past 40 years, they tend not to get it right. Paul Volcker got it right. So it doesn't mean they're wrong all the time. But at the moment, I think they're playing their hand pretty well in being accommodative. Now, the question often comes in is, geez, Cardasco, I hear you from time to time say inflation isn't necessarily bad. Why is that? You need some inflation. You need healthy inflation in the system because it contributes to growth in the economy. It helps in paying back deficits. It increases wages. I know it hurts if you're in retirement or you're not able to receive raises year over year or month over month on your income. But this is where those in retirement need to have a very, very good plan and a very, very good strategy to help your money keep up with the reduction in spending power in the future. But again, it's got to be an inflation picture that's sort of the Goldilocks approach. Not too hot, not too cold, just right. At the moment, inflation's too hot. In my opinion, it'll be a quick cool. Not like we saw back in the late 70s and early 80s when we had stagnation and hyperinflation, which created tremendous pain for many, especially those in retirement. In today's world, I was more concerned going into this pandemic on record, on podcasts, saying I am worried about the deflationary spiral that's starting to take hold and actually had taken grip prior to the pandemic. Because if some can remember back to the early 80s of hyperinflation and you think that was painful, double the pain in a deflationary environment. Very low investment returns, very low economic growth, deficits that get difficult to pay back and taxes go up on everyone, working or not. That was a picture that really, really worried me. Post-pandemic, I can push that aside at the moment. And it helps in this not too hot, not too cold inflation thesis that I am watching closely, because it all means something to you and your money. Back in the early 80s, late 70s, stagnation, no growth, deep recession with rising prices triggered by, in my opinion, a shift in the monetary policy and the way our money system worked. We went off the gold standard and allowed U.S. dollars to just trade on the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, which opened the printing press to the Treasury and the Fed driving the printing press. When you get a shift in how the money system works that has not been a challenge dealt with in the past, you get things that happened like back in the late 70s and early 80s, where it was extremely painful. As we watch cryptocurrency, it starts to look like we're having a shift in our money system and the way it works, but you don't have the buy-in of the government. That's very different. Last go around, when there was a change in how our money worked, how it functioned, our currency that we use, it was driven by the government. It was driven through negotiations with OPEC, where the Saudis agreed to allow the US dollar to be the world currency because they decided to trade oil in US dollars globally. So whatever country you're in, if you wanted to buy oil from the Middle East, OPEC, the largest producer at a time we're having an energy crisis, if that's what you want to do and buy oil, you had to do it in U.S. dollars. And in return, the Saudis got military protection from the U.S. And it allowed us to go off the gold standard and just allow the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. It's the history of money is fascinating. And for many of you who like education, I would tell you to read up on how money works globally. So right now, I'm not buying in that we're going to have a long-term inflation problem. And I'm not buying in that we have a shift taking place that will take grip. This is important, that will take grip at the moment of a new money system. Is it coming? Yes, it is, in my belief. Will it be a cryptocurrency? I'm not so sure. But at the moment, I don't think it plays in. How does inflation impact the investment markets? Well, the massive spending that's taking place may just be what's needed for long-term sustained growth with hiccups along the way. There's going to be hiccups where it doesn't look like we're paying down the deficit as fast as it should be. That markets get ahead of themselves and they correct. The Fed makes a mistake during this long-term trend. Could be a year from now. But this massive infrastructure spending, I'm not for a lot of it. Let's make that clear. But there's enough in there that you have to say, will it be a major driver to the next 30, 40, 50 years of economic growth? And there's a strong possibility of that. And if you got to buy in to one side of this thing, as they whittle it down and try to get it a little bit closer to a picture that paints better long-term spending on projects that will give long-term rewards versus all the short-term stuff that's not going to drive long-term growth, like giveaways and free money to things that do nothing for the long-term sustainability of a good, healthy economy. I believe there's enough of potential in the spending that you'll get 3 to 4 to maybe 5 projects, long-term good infrastructure projects that pay dividends and rewards to our economy and the increased life standard of generations to come. Let me give you an example. If you look at a chart of when President Eisenhower signed in the highway byway system in our country, I still remember, do you remember when I-95 in Pennsylvania finally connected sometime in the 80s, maybe late 70s, but everybody was talking about if this thing was ever going to get built? Well, all of that started back in the 50s. You can put a chart of the U.S. highway byway system, the interstates, the turnpikes. Remember Roads to Nowhere back in the 60s and 70s as they were laying the foundation of a highway byway system and all the massive amount of money that went into that? You can put a chart up of every mile of the highway byway system that was created in this country from the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, and into that period of time, into the 80s, and put a chart of the stock market next to it, and you can see a very close correlation of growth, of positive returns. Was the highway byway system the reason why the stock market did so well? Not the only reason, but it was a big part of it to move goods and services and people and to expand and see the economy moving at fast speed or faster speed than what it would have been, pay dividends to us all. And you'll find in a look back 50 years from now that in this spending period that we're in, there'll be things that come out of it that propel us. The other interesting factor here, and you need to be aware of this, is technology. The advances in technology are happening at warp, warp, warp speed, where it would have taken 20 years, just 15 years ago, to see industries and businesses make gains using technology, where it's happening now in a 3-year cycle, because that's how technology works. There's a velocity factor in this thing, and that velocity speeds and speeds and speeds and speeds at a much faster pace. So I'm positive there will be short-term problems, but for the future generations, because somehow political leaders like to talk about our future generations, I think there's a lot here that will give a lot of potential in the future. Yes, I know we're spending a lot of money as a nation. It's going to be a problem. We'll fall behind in paying that back, just like many households do in the circle of life of raising families, starting a family, opening a business, good job creation, stable, household economic footing, investments, retirement. There'll be setbacks along the way, but I believe that we have the potential for some things that will create good economic growth. And that economic growth will go to help pay down the deficit and some inflation along the way. One of the biggest components to stock market returns is the inflation factor. Companies who pay dividends pass on the increased cost of goods and services and profitability that might come from inflation to investors. What do you need to be cautious of on your money? Investments that get hurt during hyperinflation times or uncontrolled inflation, they tend to be in the areas of bonds and fixed income, as it's called. You still need some fixed income in a portfolio if you want to be conservative or be balanced even. Shouldn't skew it to conservative, but how about just being balanced? Balanced meaning you got half your money in risk assets like stocks and bonds. You got half of your money in assets that have less risk than stocks and bonds like fixed income. You need to diversify that fixed income account and stress test it against normal inflation, healthy inflation, and runaway inflation to see what it does, which is a lot of what we do day in and day out. So when it comes to protecting your investment, there are things that you can do to help protect you. So hopefully you found today informative. All of this has come from you, and I appreciate your loyalty in listenership and coming here to understand where money meets wealth and what it means to you. So please keep the questions and the requests for topic discussions coming to me, Steve Cordasco. And you can reach me at asksteve@cfnplan.com. That's asksteve@cfnplan.com. And I appreciate you listening. Have a great week.
If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discuss to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cordasco Financial Network at cfnplan.com.